I guess
it's
we
like
read
the
somehow.
The
we
song
got a
craze.
Double introduction.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say, maybe the people that are listening, we just got introduced twice, so it's okay.
Yes.
You can never be introduced enough. That's what I say. How are you?
Especially
to
the
so
queen.
True. How are you, John?
How am I? That is an excellent question. If I had a really good answer for
Oh,
question.
Why did you have to ask that question, Evie? All right, buddy, tell the world.
I'm fine.
What
no,
happened?
You're not.
No, my back's hurting, but other than that, I'm just fine. I'm fine.
No, it's we had this wonderful down mattress cover, except it wasn't real down because Johnny's allergic to feathers. But it was just a lovely, comfortable thing. And Johnny blames that for his back pain because he said it was too comfortable. So
no, I didn't. I said it's
So that's how he's doing. And other than that, the world is fine. So
yeah.
Okay.
So if I go,
well, are you okay
though? When we're on the air, you'll know why.
Oh, he's fine.
Well,
he's
I was going to ask you then if you're having trouble, you know, sleeping, are you okay in the car?
Yeah, actually, what a
All
segue.
Right.
You are the best, Hezzy, let me tell you. Yeah, no, in the car, everything's good because I'm setting up and I'm sort of, you know, I sort of stay in one place when you're driving.
Okay.
The new cars, especially, well, and we had two this week we could talk about, but the new cars have such a really, most of them anyway, have such a really, whoever's designed the seating in them has taken the ergonomics of the physical design of the human into consideration. So it's not just your seat going back and forward or up and down. You now have lots of adjustments and lumbar support and all kinds of things that you can do and really customize your seat. And then the ones we also had the programmable. You can set, you know, like driver one and driver two, you can set your seat for when you are driving. You just push the button and it remembers what it is that you like in the seating position. So, yeah, they're actually very comfortable now.
So I guess what we just learned from you, Johnny, is that Lori's a number one and you're number two.
Yeah. Yeah, pretty much.
Am I right?
Yeah, completely.
I am so relieved because when you asked Johnny how he stays awake when he drives, it's because I tell him how to drive.
Yeah.
Where to go.
Yeah. All the things we men love about driving with our wives, yeah.
Right.
And
it's okay. It's okay.
All of my backseat driving, right, Johnny?
Oh, yeah.
Keeps him awake, and there have been some times when it tested our marriage, but we're here and we're together. And we're going to talk today about the Chrysler Pacifica Hybrid, which was a real treat. And it's the first of all, the Chrysler Pacifica, whether it's a hybrid or not, is just such an innovative, wonderful van. One of my top three cars that I would buy if I were buying a car, and maybe even the one with me, because it's got all the bells and whistles. It's so diverse. And we'll talk about the hybrid component in a minute. But for those of you who haven't heard our reviews of the Chrysler Pacifica in the past, this new 2019 hybrid edition is just an incredible piece of automotive delight. The reasons why I have loved this particular naked model, the Chrysler Pacifica model, is because it is three rows of seats with enormous ample leg room, but the beauty of this is that you can push down the seats, compress the seats, and they go into the floor. They don't just, you know, the back doesn't just fold over to the seat proper. The whole unit folds into the floor, giving you an enormous amount of storage space because both the second and third rows do fold down. Also, it's push button. There's no fighting with anything. You push a button and these things go down into the floor by themselves. They come up by themselves.
Wow. The door opens. I mean,
you can kick the door. It opens by itself. Johnny's not breaking his poor strained back as it is. But the thing is, it drives beautifully. It's
quiet.
quiet car.
Which I was amazed about.
Very intuitive. You don't feel like you're fighting the steering wheel, which you do on some of these vans, I must say, but not on this. This is almost like a luxury car that happens to be a van. And I don't even want to call it a family van because it's so much more. It is a family van, of course, but it is a van that Johnny and I could delight in because when we go antiquing, we could fold the seats down. Mm.
We go antiquing? When do we go antiquing? You go antiquing.
And I drag you along. That makes us antiquing.
Oh, my gosh. I think I'm just an antique.
No, well, that too. But then, I mean, it's just, as I said, diverse, a wonderful car, and streamlined, and a lovely line. I mean, I can't say anything negative about this vehicle, and if you don't stop me, I'll keep, you know, waxing lyrical about it. So, Johnny, why don't you give us some of the specifications?
In a minute. Hezzy knows this, but, and I just can't resist saying it, but last week we tried to record a show, or tried to do a show, and
right.
we found out that the media is that they use wasn't working. We had the best show. I think we talked for like 10 minutes, didn't we, honey?
We did.
We had a brilliant show going, and we thought, wonder where Hezzy is, because we're just talking about it.
Oh, that's great.
And it was so good, and really we were covering these things. And Lori was much more eloquent in her
than I am this morning, that's for sure. And then I finally said to Johnny, I don't think that anybody's listening.
Anybody's on the other line. Well, okay. So, anyway. Well, maybe we could
get in touch with that again, and then we could relive that experience. Unfortunately, the system was down, and yet what's fascinating is like today we had a double introduction. Last time there was no introduction. And I couldn't access you guys, but you heard the recording. So this technology stuff is way beyond my capacity. It's
most
driving me insane.
They should call the show "Driving Me Crazy." You should do a show like that.
Well, they should. That's a great.
My favorite radio show is Radio Classics 148. It's on Sirius. It's just absolutely fabulous. This Greg Bell, who's the announcer, is absolutely tremendous. He is so knowledgeable, and he's so concise with his introductions, and his research is outstanding. But this morning I was listening to Gunsmoke with William Conrad.
Yeah.
And the storyline was about how there was a man who had not been home for 6 years because he was so far away he couldn't communicate with his brother, who then went on and married the brother's fiancée, and so the storyline goes. But and stole the family farm. It was a good episode. But the point I want to make is, here we are, you know, barely 125 years later, which is only two generations of a lifetime in a family, and we've got all of this Ethernet and Internet and we can communicate in a split second. Whereas back in Gunsmoke times, you would lose when you were face to face, or you got a telegram or a letter, which took weeks and weeks to get you. So I mean, what a difference in the way people have been forced to modernize with the technology, and sometimes it's just too overwhelming.
Yeah.
Well, the good thing is that Johnny wouldn't have to ride those horses, bareback, and he wouldn't have trouble.
Let me tell you what I think of horses. They make good yard ornaments, is what I think.
Yes, they do.
Hezzy, for you, we would have gotten you a carriage, you know, matched pair of horses. King of Radio would have had it all.
Yeah, New York riding in style. Okay, let me talk about the Chrysler for a minute.
Okay.
This was a hybrid. This is the Pacific Hybrid. And Lori is right about one of the things we talked about was how far vans just in and of themselves have come. If you'll remember, in the old vans, there was one door on, and I believe as always was on the driver's side, and you opened it and you had to slide it back, and when you closed it, you had to slide it forward and make sure it slammed shut, or it would hang up and the rear part of it would still be not locked. And so, yeah, but hey, it was a big step in the right direction, more room, you could carry all this stuff, all that kind of thing. And then eventually they went to having a door on both sides of the van. And what a great thing. Oh, there was big commercials about now you could get in either side kind of thing. Well, the Pacifica, when you want to open either of the side doors, you simply push the button on the door handle, just like you would if you were locking it or unlocking it with the keyless entry. You simply push the button on the door, and it opens by itself. Nice slow motion, blah, blah, blah. You get in, you get out, whatever it is that you're doing. You want to close the door, you simply push the button, and electronically it moves up and seals itself, so you have no exertion in trying to do that, number one. I mean, just think about that kind of thing. Then, secondly, you have the where you wave your foot underneath the bumper, and the door opens, the rear door goes up, the trunk goes up, so that you can put your groceries, if you have arms full of groceries, you can put them in the back of the car without straining yourself, without having to put things down, try to figure things out. There's another thing. This one had TV sets in the back of the driver and passenger seats. In the second row, they didn't have anything in the third row, but they had them in the second row, and they had individual headsets and individual programming. Kids, assuming it's kids, could watch different things on each TV set, and there was enough headsets so that the kids could. It's like being on a plane. You know, kids can listen to whatever they want to listen with other kids at the same time. You know, it's just, we're talking about technology and traveling and the comfort and the quiet of being in the vehicle and how good all that is. Well, that was just a segue into the fuel economy, which without the electric being used at all, this thing gets 30 miles to the gallon.
Wow.
Now, think about the size of it. It's a van is a big, the Pacifica is a big van, 30 miles to the gallon. However, if you're using electricity and gasoline, and if you have a 240-volt outlet, you know, the three-prong deal, you can charge this thing up in 2 hours. It takes about 14 hours through a 120-volt. But 2 hours in a 240-volt charger, and with the electric all the way up and the gas, and it knows when to go to gas, knows when to go to electric, 82 miles per gallon.
Wow.
The annual fuel cost is about $1,000. Less than $100 a month, and that's everything. And the greenhouse effect, you know, this emissions and all that kind of thing, the greenhouse gas rating, 10 out of 10. The smog rating, so when it's running with the gasoline part, is 7 out of 10. So it's not only comfortable, it's not only quiet, it not only has all these features, it's economic, what's the word I'm looking for, honey, about the environment? It's environmentally efficient.
Logical.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. It just, whoever really thought about and did a lot of the design work on this did a marvelous job. Really, really. And I'm not a van person. You know, that was one of the things we were talking about last week. We were having a good time about. You remember once upon a time, if you owned a van, people looked down on you. Oh, my gosh, they've got a van. What's wrong with those people? You know, and if you know, you sort of had it sort of told about your station in life. You pull up in a van, you get out and you start pumping gas, and everybody knows you've got children. You know,
right.
those people have kids. So they've got a van. And it was sort of that kind of a thing. And now with this one, people look at it and think, wow, I'd like to have one of those. And it doesn't matter whether you have kids or not. It's just a really, really nice vehicle. So I enjoyed it. And the price. I'll give you the price. We'll talk about more of the features. But but the price, total price, $50,000. It's a lot.
That's a bargain.
A lot of van. And the optional equipment, we only had like three things that totaled, I don't know, three things that totaled $3,000. So the base price is $45,000. So there was very little added to it. And or you're going to say something, honey, and then I'll talk about some of the safety features. But
well, so if you have a family of seven, which Wynn, who's unfortunately not with us right now, with his five children and mother and father, seven, this is a car that you would be. It would be wonderful to take this on a long car trip. Absolutely wonderful, because you have the component for the video for the second row seat, which is two club chairs. I'm sorry, you could get, I think, a bench in this or two club chairs. So you've got the second row seating, and then you've got the third row seating, which is expansive. I mean, the leg room in this vehicle is unbelievable. And still, even behind the third seat, there's plenty of storage for suitcases or groceries or whatever.
Well, that's one of the things that I like. Just let me say this, that even with all the seats up, and assuming you've got people in all those seats, when you open the trunk, they've dished it out at the bottom. It's not flat at the bottom. There's a big dish that would allow you to stack things or put more things in there, things on top of one another. So, you, like Lori said, you could put suitcases in there. It's not just for groceries. I mean, it's somebody designed this with the thought, well, what if we wanted to do this? And so there's extra room in the thing.
You know,
really nice.
You can't, you know, obviously we were talking before the show, Hezzy, about you going over to visit family in Europe, and obviously you can't drive on the ocean. But I'll tell you something. With the way airports are these days and the costs of air flights these days and the connection difficulties and all of the things that are going on in the airports, if a family or anybody wanted to take, like I said, a car trip and go cross-country, this is a fabulous vehicle. And sometimes when I look at delays with flights, especially in the wintertime or with malfunctioning airplanes, it would probably be even quicker than flying. But the point is that this runs the gamut of your, you know, runabout car, picking up kids from school, being grandparents like we are, you know, just going off the two of us or having grandchildren with us, whatever, to a full-blown family. This is what the station wagon was when Johnny and I were growing up.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, and it's big. It's a different configuration, obviously much more modern, with all of the components that we have today that we didn't have, 40, 50 years ago. But the fact is, this is the child of the station wagon. This is, you know, an incredible vehicle. And, you know, again, the lights, the nighttime lights, the dimmer switches, everything, the safety features of this car. I can't think of one thing about this vehicle that would be unattractive. And also, if you're driving in the city, this is not a big deal. This isn't like a massive SUV, although it's probably just as long and maybe even as wide. But you don't have that feeling because it doesn't have the height. But why would you need the height unless you're your circumstance or off-road? Johnny, go ahead with some of the specs.
Well, this was actually an option, and it's called the Advanced Safety Tech Group, but it was $995. So for less than $1,000, you get 360-degree surround view camera system, and we've talked about those before, which I'm amazed at.
Yeah.
Because you've got the vehicle in the center of the square, and then you can actually see the ground all the way around it, like when you put it in reverse. And it's an amazing technology. Then it's got full speed forward collision warning plus, which means it's going to help stop you. Adaptive cruise control with stop and go. That's the one where, you know, it's monitoring what's going on ahead of you. It's going to stop, and if you move into the left-hand lane, if a car's slowing down in front of you and you move into the left-hand lane, it just speeds back up on its own. It goes back up to what you've set it at. Lane departure warning plus, which means, of course, if you start swerving out of the lane, it warns you. Either your seat vibrates. I think your seat vibrates on this one, although I don't think I ever got outside the lane. It's just a very comfortable car to drive. But there was, but anyway, it's got the lane warning. It's got parallel and perpendicular parking assist. So it's one of those that you can push the button, and it parks itself for you. I just, you know, this is in a van. It's got,
yeah,
and again, all of this for $995. Rain-sensitive windshield wipers. It knows when it's raining and turns them on automatically. Advanced brake assist. Automatic high beam headlight control. Brings your head your high beams up or turns them down depending on traffic.
And let me just say this advanced brake assist. It means that it'll warn you that you need to brake. You get it. You'll get it. But if you don't do it fast enough, it'll brake for you.
Sure.
This is a life-saving technology.
Yeah, most everything on here is really geared around that. Well, not geared around that. It has the theater, what we're talking about, the theater system with wireless streaming. This is all part of the $995. Blu-ray DVD players, seat-back video screens, talked about that, HDMI ports, USB video ports, 115-volt auxiliary power outlet, a three-channel video remote control, three-channel wireless headphones, and
you can plug any device or anything, even your ironing board, into this car. It's got the ports for everything.
Yeah, and that's all. And that's just one. That's the one option. That was $995. I don't know how you could not put that on your car. I just can't imagine. And
being a Chrysler, this is for the long haul. I mean, I firmly believe this car is going to take you to 500,000 miles and more.
Yeah. Well, anyway, this one also had a V6 in it. So besides the electric, it's got plenty of power. V6 engine, I don't know, all the airbags you could think of, all those things that we've come to take for granted now. Sirius XM radio, of course, which Lori loves, and I actually enjoy too. A 7-inch full-color digital driver info display, which is,
nice.
Plenty big enough. Yeah. Trying to think what else. Looking on here. It had leather. I mean, it was a $795 appearance package that included Napa leather bucket seats in the front with a big S, bigger tires, 18-inch tires. All-season tires, black badging, black daylight, opening moldings, black this, black that. I don't know. Is that something I'd spend the money for? No.
Yeah, and I'll tell you why. Because it lasts longer. It's not just the looks. It's the fact that this is material that's going to last a lot longer than otherwise. And, you buy this vehicle if you're a young family and you have a couple of kids that are, one or two or three or four years old, you're going to be seeing them through college in this vehicle. It's going to be growing up with your family.
No, I don't know. I would think 10 years. If you got little kids, by the time they're 10, they're going to be pretty good size. You'll probably be looking for a second vehicle to accommodate some of them.
See, my feeling is that what else can you add to this? I mean, who knows what the technology is going to do,
right?
Apart from this self-driving business, which I do not believe in. But the fact is, I mean, how much more technology can they add to something like this? You take good care of this vehicle, you garage it, you wash it, and make sure that you don't have salt underneath the body in the wintertime if your roads are salted. This is going to last a long time, and it should be cared for. This is a beautiful piece of technology and machinery. And on that note, Johnny, because we've really kind of gone a little bit over what we wanted to do, let's highlight a little bit about what we're going to talk about next week.
Well, I don't know. What car are we getting today? Because that's what we're going to talk about next week.
So weren't we going to talk about a second car today?
Yeah, but that's the Mazda. I don't want to talk about it next week. I want to talk about it today.
That's what I'm saying.
Okay. We got a 2019 Nissan Maxima SR, which is kind of the sports car version of their Maxima. And it's got a spoiler on the back. That was one thing. It's got the black tires, wide tires, low-profile tires. It had a V6 engine in it, 3.5-liter V6, 300 horsepower, lots of get-up-and-go, paddle shifters if you wanted them, never use that. Sports-tuned suspension. The one thing about it is you're buying a sports car. When you get this kind of thing, you're buying a sports car. Does it ride smoothly? No. Can you hear the road? Yes. And you can feel the road. But it's meant to be that way. It's the sports car version of the Maxima. But it was a super car to run around in.
Very handsome.
Yeah, very good looking. And
sleek and not overblown. I mean, not a lot of, chrome stuff added to it. It's very, very sleek and distinguished looking. And what was the price tag on this?
$42,000. Totally loaded, $42,000.
It's a lovely to handle. Again, Johnny's right. This is the sports car, so it's got the, you know, a little bit of the sound going on. You've got to be as one with the car when you drive, meaning that you really you feel the gas, especially the accelerator. You have to have a very light foot on it. Your wheel, your steering is something you've got, you know, to be in tune with. There's not a lot of play in the steering wheel.
No,
drive.
No, it's very responsive.
Very responsive.
I liked how I had, so that was good.
Yeah, this is a lovely four-door sedan, sports car, a sports coupe, and it was just a pleasure to drive. This is the car for us, I suppose, to go around and about with. Is it a long-distance car? Yeah, it's very comfortable.
I don't know. I see between 30 and 40-something-year-olds buying this car.
It's not a family car.
It's not a
family car.
It's a youth, sort of a youth thing.
It's got a lot of prestige to it.
Yeah.
It's got all the safety bells and whistles. What else can you say about it, Johnny? You've got the spec sheet.
Well, it had all the bells and whistles, all these things that we just got through talking about on the one car. You know, it has all these, excuse me, it has all these same things, leather seats, heated steering, heated seats.
What was the mileage?
Mileage. It gets an average of 24 miles to the gallon. It gets 30 on the highway and 20 in the city.
So this is a great commuter car.
Yep.
You know, this is,
if you want to look a little sporty.
Yeah, it's a good stop and go car, easy to handle, easy to park. Again, it's not really a family car at all, but it wasn't designed to be. I think
got a nice Bose sound system in it.
Yeah, very,
for example.
Very pleasant.
Yeah.
What else, Johnny?
I don't know. Overall, I think you've hit most of the things. Kind of a sports car part of the Maxima, and it was a really nice car. And it had a lot of all the safety features, had a lot of power. It's 42 grand. Nothing.
Here we've got Nissan, which has come, you know, barrels ahead of its early days, and it's really.
Yeah.
Is this car worth 42 grand? It depends on who's buying it. In the market for its competitors against its competition, it's very good value. Does it have the brand loyalty that some of the other makes would have? No.
That's an interesting thing, too, this brand loyalty and stuff. I don't know about Nissan as far as the brand loyalty. You don't hear many people saying, oh, I got to have my Nissan. But they've done a good job in the market of being competitive, or they wouldn't be around, but being competitive and having a quality car. So, I don't know.
I remember driving a Nissan many years ago. The engine was superlative. It just would never quit. It was always so wonderful. I enjoyed it. Excellent.
I had one too.
Engine.
And see, I had a little truck.
Yeah.
I had one of the Nissan trucks, and I liked it a lot.
Oh.
I enjoyed it.
Nice.
It's one of those. I kept it for probably a year or so, and then, you know, got something else. But yeah, I enjoyed it when I had it.
And I guess that's the thing about Nissan. It's dependable.
Yeah, I agree.
And I do not see, and I may be wrong about this, I don't see Nissan competing with other manufacturers in their niche to copy the look of a car. I feel that they do have their own look. I feel that they are more insular in that they are developing a vehicle that is based around performance, but not trying to copy or be a cheaper knockoff, so to speak, of some of the higher-end makers.
Right.
I think that because they are not an American brand, they don't have that recognition of being an American, you know, car. But they've been around a long, long time, I think World War II. But the point is that they are creating their own product the way that they do it best, and the way that they feel it should look in connection with its actual the architecture of the motor, the vehicle itself. So I think that the one thing I can say about Nissan is they are their own person, so to speak. Does that make some sense?
Yeah, sure.
It does.
And on that
very interesting.
Note,
yes.
Our time is up.
Unfortunately. So we'll have to discuss. We'll see what new vehicle we'll be working on next week. That'll be fantastic.
Yeah. What did they tell us we're getting?
Oh, guys, you're the best.
Well,
what?
They did tell us what we're getting, but I wrote it down, but I don't remember which piece of paper on my desk, which is stacked with a million pieces of paper.
It's getting old and knowledge cracked up to be, is it, Hezzy?
No, but we'll let Hezzy
know.
No,
it's not.
Whatever it is, it'll be great. It's
well, you know, but I thought if anybody was going to be, cognizant of those issues, it would be you and Lori, because Lori looks like she's kept the bargain and she stayed young. I don't know about you, John, but
no,
that's my
tremendously.
Problem, all right, folks, what a pleasure.
A
we'll
week.
Speak to you next
say,
week. All
just,
the best.
Let me just
yes.
say, Johnny looks like Santa Claus, and Santa Claus is eternal. So, John,
oh,
that's
my
right.
God. Yeah.
All right.
Bye, buddy.
All right. Be well. Thanks.
Bye-bye.
You too. All the best. Bye. Oh, how exciting. Great to have them on. And it looks like we're going to have Phil Watson. He's on the line. Good morning, Mr. Watson. What a pleasure to have you on today.
Hey, good morning. How are you?
Really okay. And feeling a lot better now that we know you're on. I should introduce you very quickly. You're the B.F. Goodrich Director of Consumer Public Relations. My God, that is a mouthful, but evidently you must abide by all those words. That's fantastic.
You know,
it's a lot to live up to.
Yeah, it's easier just to say the B.F. Goodrich PR guy sometimes. That's usually how I introduce myself. It's a little bit
okay.
less verbose.
Well, really, it really. Well, you know, next time we talk, I'll have to remember that. I want to ask you something about the things that we're going to talk about today, and I don't fully understand about these affiliated and non-affiliated tradesmen and tradeswomen, and evidently, B.F. Goodrich has designed something specific for them.
Absolutely.
Tell us a little bit about that, which is really intriguing.
Sure. So to understand this new tradesman support program that B.F. Goodrich has launched, I kind of need to give a little bit of history on our all-terrain tire. Could I back up just a little bit and talk
about
how we developed that category and how that led us to this? So B.F. Goodrich,
okay.
Pretty well-known name in tires. It was actually started in 1870 in Ohio. And I've got a quiz for you. Does anyone know what the BF stands for in BF Goodrich without Googling it?
No. I'm sorry. I thought it stood for somebody's initials like Ben Franklin or something.
Yes, it actually does. That is exactly it. It is Dr. Benjamin Franklin Goodrich.
You're
was
kidding.
The, yes, no, I'm not. You guessed correctly.
Oh, my
yes,
God.
Yes.
So he was a doctor, not the Benjamin Franklin we know that was out there
yep.
with a kite.
Not
oh
that
my
one.
Goodness.
He was a little bit
not
before before this time. But, yeah, there was another person named Benjamin Franklin Goodrich, and shortened to B.F. Goodrich in 1870, the company was founded. So I say that to say that the company's been making tires for a long time. One of the older tire companies out there. But we invented the all-terrain category. So for those of you that aren't familiar with what that means, the all-terrain category is a category of tire for people who need to have confidence off the road, but they're going to be on the road a lot too. So you see these big knobby mud tires. Those are great off-road.
Yeah.
They're have to great traction. They're very tough. But sometimes you have to make some trade-offs on the pavement. Well, what if you're going to be on the pavement a lot more than you're going to be off the road? That's why we developed and pioneered the all-terrain category. So it's a tire that you're probably got it on a truck, a Jeep, an SUV, maybe a van, and you're going to be on the pavement nearly the whole time. But sometimes, a very small, maybe 25%, 10% of the time, you're going to be off the pavement. And when you are off the pavement, you've got to have a tire that's going to be tough. It's going to stand up to the rocks and all the things you're driving over. It's got to have traction, and it's got to not get you stuck when you're off that pavement. So about 40 years ago. It was in the 1970s we developed the all-terrain category. And so we've had, and by the way, before then, it was not a category. That was just not something that tire makers did, was focus on a tire that could perform both on the road and off the road. So several generations later, we're at the BF Goodrich all-terrain KO2 tire, which is one of our most popular products. You'll see it all over the place on trucks, Jeeps, SUVs. And the latest generation of this was launched in 2014. That's when the KO2 was launched. Previous to that, it was the KO. So we're a few years in now to the next generation of our all-terrain tire. And we came to a realization last year that there are a lot of tradesmen in this country. And when I say tradesmen, I'm talking about, skilled trades, an estimated 30 million of them in the U.S. alone. And that's people who their truck is their office, right? It is their weekend recreation tool. They use it to make money. It's their daily driver, and they drive a lot. And for these folks, think of plumbers, carpenters, framers, roofers, the people, men and women building the highways. For them, lost time is lost money. And so they need a tire that's not going to leave them stranded. And furthermore, they're going to need a tire that's going to be good on construction sites, that can take driving over some tools or over some kind of jagged rocks. They're going to be on the pavement most of the time, but then they're going to be off the pavement sometimes. And when they're off the pavement, it has to work. So that realization brought us to our tradesman support program. So there's no other tire brand doing this. We wanted to become the go-to tire for tradesmen and women in this country. So we developed a program that's going to throw our support behind tradesmen. And it does a couple different things. And you asked earlier about the difference between associations and non-associations. So I can maybe explain that a little bit. So
sure, that would be interesting.
So with this program, we have partnered with various trade associations that represent people who drive trucks a lot, or Jeeps, or SUVs, or vans. So things like the National Association of Home Builders, the National Association of Landscape Professionals, the National Cattlemen's Beef Association, which is, ranchers and folks, raising cows. The Painting Contractors Association of America. The Associated Contractors. The American Road and Transportation Builders Association. Even the American Quarter Horse Association, which has a very large number of members, obviously, who use trucks. And those are just – we've got more coming later in the year as well. But those organizations that I just mentioned who we have partnered with represent about close to a million members collectively in the U.S. So if you are a member of one of the associations, you are eligible for the BF Goodrich Tradesman Support Program. If you are not a member – but you're still a tradesman and you self-identify, maybe you've got your small business or you've got your own company, it's just you are still eligible for it. So if you're a member of the associations, one of the perks is you get $100 off a set of KO2s, the all-terrain tire that I just talked about, which is a significant – that's a significant amount off when you look at how much a set of those costs. That's a really, really good chunk of change off a set of those tires. Now, if you are not a member of one of the associations, you still get $70 off, which is also a very good chunk of change off a set of those tires. And we're going beyond that, too. There's several other elements, and whether you're a member of these associations or you're not, it doesn't matter. You still get all the rest of the things that I'll describe here. So one of the things that we're doing, if you purchase a set of KO2 tires through this tradesman support program, we're going to give you 2 years of job site assistance. So that means if you are on the road at a job site, wherever you might be, on the weekend at home, whatever, and you're having issues with your vehicle, we're going to send someone out there. We'll tow you up to 150 miles. This doesn't have to be tire issues, by the way. It could be a dead battery. Could be your starter's out. Whatever problem you might have on the side of the road, for 2 years, we're going to have you covered when you get these tires.
That is fantastic.
Yeah, it's a great perk. Like I said earlier, lost time is lost money for the folks who work in skilled trade. So they need to be up and running. And so we feel that, one, this tire, And I can talk a little more in a bit about the tire and how tough it is and some of the ways that we've developed this tire. It's actually an incredible story, the lengths that we have gone to make the toughest all-terrain tire possible. Mm. It involves the Baja Desert down in Mexico. I'll get to that in just a second. But we feel that these tires are going to give them more time up and running. And then if there is a problem, whether it's a tire or if it's anything else, they've got that whole roadside assistance program. We're also offering a 30-day satisfaction guarantee. And this is a rare thing for tires. When you think about if you go to a dealership and you buy a set of tires, taking it back, you can't really bring them back if you don't like them. Well, with this program, you can. You have 30 days. If for any reason you purchase them and you don't like them, we'll take them back. Which, for obvious reasons, that's not a very common thing with tires, because once they've been mounted on a car and driven, that tire's not going to be sold. It's done. But we are confident enough that this KO2 tire is not there. We're not going to have people do that. And just to put our money where our mouth is, we're offering this 30-day satisfaction guarantee. And in
that's
addition
actually,
to that...
Okay, go ahead.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
Well, I'm just amazed that, you know, this seems like such a good program, and I recognize it to be just conducive to the population that you're trying to serve. But what's fascinating is that it's taken so long for this sort of very, very simple concept that is conducive to the people who need it. It's just amazing, you know, when it's so good, it says, like, why didn't somebody think of this 30, 40, 50 years ago?
Yeah, that's where
you're
we are.
You're saying that the all-terrain tire really actually helped you get to this point? Because I guess it must be because of the efficacy of the tire.
Yeah, so the all-terrain tire, there's several things. And let me tell you kind of how we developed this. So BF Goodrich, we use the desert as our testing lab. So I don't know if you're familiar with desert racing, like the Baja 1000, the Baja 500, the Mint 400.
I'm only
familiar
of it, but I was never there. The Baja in Mexico.
Okay. So roughest terrain you can imagine, and they're racing 1,000 miles over. They're not on roads. They're going over rocks. It's just incredible what these trucks, and they're doing it like 100 miles an hour. So BF Goodrich has in this world for decades now. And we actually came up with what I'll say was just a great idea decades ago is, hey, let's be the tire that all these racers want to use. And let's use this as a real world laboratory. So as we have developed our tires, both all terrain and mud terrain and also off road racing, the technology that we have in it today is results of our engineers studying how those tires handle the most extreme conditions, being driven 100 miles an hour over rocks in the middle of the desert in the Baja Peninsula of Mexico. So if you purchase a KO2, there is decades of technology that we have, the technological advances that we have learned from desert racing in that tire. Another fun fact, every KO2 has something stamped on the sidewall, and it says Baja Champion. Our legal department will not let us put that on a tire unless the tire has actually won, not just competed in it, but actually won a category of the Baja 1000. So the KO2s that are on trucks that you'll see everywhere, that actual tire has competed in and won the Baja 1000, which, again, is the most brutal 1,000-mile off-road race you can imagine. So for me, and I run KO2s on my truck as well, that's just gives me a great deal of confidence knowing if I'm on a dirt road, if I'm going over some gravel, this tire has won the Baja 1000 before. It's just a great mark on the side, and very few other tires can make that claim that are sold commercially.
Well, that's interesting because you lend a great deal of integrity to the product, because people, I think, do, at least they're familiar with the Baja races. So that's really fascinating. Really fascinating. Do you also sell your product on an international basis? Or did they use that in the Dakar Rally as well?
Yes, so we are an international brand. BF Goodrich tires are sold all over the world. And yes, we actually have one, I think it's something, I don't want to quote how many, but something like 13 of the last 15 Dakar rallies have been won on BF Goodrich tires. They're
You're kidding me. That's fantastic.
We absolutely are very involved in the Dakar rally, which is similar to the Baja, Baja Peninsula races, and that is the extreme off-road conditions. They require tires that are going to go through deserts, mountains, through water sometimes. So it's a, Now, one other thing, I want to go back to the Baja racing that I didn't mention about the tradesman program. Another part of us becoming a part of the tradesman community, if you purchase tires through this tradesman program, whether or not you're part of an association, you can be eligible for sweepstakes, where we are going to give you VIP experiences like going down to the Baja 1000 with us, or going to the Mint 400, which is a big off-road race in Las Vegas that just happened a few weeks ago. We're going to be taking tradesmen down and giving them an experience that literally money cannot buy. You can only get this experience because we're a sponsor with these races, so we have access to the race, and we're going to let these folks do some driving of their own through the desert and see what it's like to race in these things. They're going to have behind the scenes access to the race. It's a huge party, just a great time down in Mexico for the Baja 1000 and in Las Vegas for the Mint 400. So as the program matures, we're going to continue to have programs like this where we're going to bring tradesmen kind of into our world and give them very cool experiences that you really can only get with BF Goodrich.
That is really very exciting. It must be exciting to work for a company that's staying innovative and pertinent in the present day. You must be very, very proud to be with them.
I am, and it's just been such a fun few years here. Getting to, and like you said, the best part of it is that we've got these products that we can back up with experiences. So probably the best part of my job is when I'm able to bring people out and let them firsthand experience our products. Because I'll tell you, if you've never been out in a desert racing environment, and that first time you're in the UTV or you're in the buggy or the truck, and you are blasting over these rutted out, the rocks in the desert, you cannot believe this tire can stand this. If you did this with a tire on your car, it would possibly just shred on contact. So it's one of those things that seeing is believing. It's hard to understand how tough these tires are until you've actually put them through the ringer yourself out there on the off-road course.
Very exciting. Before we forget and before we run out of time, how does somebody join this BF Goodrich incentive? How do you become an affiliated member as a tradesman or a tradeswoman?
Yeah, so there's two ways that you can do it. Option one, simply go to a dealership that sells BF Goodrich tires and tell them that you want the tradesman program. This is a national program, and anywhere that any authorized BF Goodrich dealer will know about the program. So you'll purchase your tires there, and you'll get a form from the dealer that'll have instructions for how you get your money. Okay, so that's option one. There's another option as well. You can also go to bfgoodrichtires.com/tradesmen. That's www.bfgoodrichtires.com/tradesmen. And there are instructions there where you can actually purchase online if that's what you prefer. And what's interesting, here's how it works when you purchase tires online. This is a relatively new thing, but you put in all the information about the size you need, and then you're going to select a dealer to install them near you. The map pops up. You put in your zip code or your address. It shows the options near you. You choose the place and the time for when they're going to be installed. The tires automatically go to that dealership. You simply drive there on the day and time that you selected. They install them, and you drive off, and you don't pay anything because you've already paid the entire amount online, including installation.
Wow.
So those are the two ways.
Boy, thank God for technology.
It's incredible. Go into a dealership or go to bfgoodrichtires.com/tradesman. And I clarified the Dakar rally. So we actually have now had the 15 overall wins in the Dakar rally.
Okay.
And it's not been going on for that long. So that's, I'm pretty sure that is well more than a three quarters of all the rallies that they've had.
Mm-hmm. That is really a very exciting legacy. I've been to one of the Dakar rallies, and I've been to in North Africa and Morocco as well. Mm-hmm. And I think, even though I haven't been to the Baja Peninsula, I think that the Sahara Desert doesn't hold or is not deficient in standing up to even the Baja races, but very exciting. I think most people in America, they know Baja very well.
Mm-hmm.
Very exciting race.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Sure is.
And so as you develop this, what is the – how do you recognize the need for new tires and new technology? And is this unique? Are we no longer using rubber, but is it different elements that are incorporated into the KOs, the KO2 models that you're coming up
yep.
with now?
No, it is certainly we're still using rubber now. Now, the real secret here is the rubber compounds, and that is a very, very confidential proprietary thing with us
right.
is how we use those rubber compounds. So I'll say this. As far as how we were developing, we are always developing the next tire. So the KO2 has been out now, but the day that the KO2 went out, we're still thinking about, okay, what's the next generation going to be? And it can take years
yeah.
of development engineering, and we're going to continue to watch the KO2. We're going to see how it performs in off-road environments, but we're also going to see how it performs in an actual, R&D lab, which we do have a R&D lab that these tires
mm-hmm.
are tested at in South Carolina. So we're going to continue to plan for the next one. I can tell you that any time we release a tire, we're already working on the next one.
Mm-hmm.
It's a process.
That's the new technology. You buy a product today, certainly in a computer. When you buy it, it's already 6 months out of date because they're working on a completely new model. But I don't think
exactly.
it is that way with the tires. They're a little bit more present. But
yeah.
you're still studying it.
But the compounds and the tread patterns are always changing. And one interesting thing about the all-terrain category is that we are trying to blend. You have a spectrum, right? You have really good off-road performance
right.
and really good on-road performance. If you ever hear
right.
a truck with tires coming down the highway, you can hear them from 2 miles away, right? Because it's
yes.
they've got these big knobs on it. So with the all-terrain, we're going to constantly find just that perfect mix of a tread pattern that's going to give you maximum traction and toughness when you're on the trail, but it also gives you good, we call it street manners when you're driving on the road, because most people, myself included, who have KO2s in their truck, they're going to be on the pavement a lot more than they're going to be off of it. So we want
mm-hmm.
quietness. We want to be able to have a quiet ride when you're on the pavement. We want to be able to have a cell phone conversation, hear your radio, but
yeah.
when it's off the road, you've got to have that traction. So those are some of the things that we're constantly working on, is that rubber compound and the traction, the tread pattern that's going to affect noise and performance off-road, and then also the sidewall. Sidewall toughness is another really important thing for this category. When tires fail
yeah.
off-road, it's typically because of sidewall issues. And as you know, if you've ever picked up a nail, you can patch a nail. You can
yep.
take it to your tire dealer, and they'll patch it. If something happens to your sidewall, it's game over for your tire.
That's,
you can't patch
yeah,
a sidewall.
Over.
So.
Yeah.
You can look up images of the KO2 and some of the stuff that sidewall can take, but you could, we put the entire weight of a vehicle on the sidewall. It's going through a rock, pinches over sharp rocks and sticks and things like that. So sidewall
mm-hmm.
toughness is a very big deal for us in this category, because the sidewall is the thing that most commonly can fail you when you're off-road. So we put a lot of engineering into giving the toughest sidewall possible.
Well, Mr. Watson, do you think that people recognize the sophistication of this technology that you put into the tires, or are they unaware of it?
I think there's two camps. You've got people who are enthusiasts. So if you are an off-roading enthusiast and you have, let's
yeah.
say, a Jeep or a Ford Raptor, and you have done all sorts of upgrades to it, you're going to know about tires. You're going to know the benefits that a tire brings you, and you're probably going to be
mm-hmm.
excited when you buy a new set of KO2s. So the enthusiast,
yeah.
yes, but I think most people, including maybe if you're a tradesman, your philosophy is, look, I just want a tire that's not going to fail on me. I need a tire that will,
yes.
Get me to the job and back. I don't want to be on the side of the road. I don't want to have to call that, roadside support number. So
mm-hmm.
I think you're not that interested in the technology. You're interested in the benefit. The benefit is a tough tire that's not going to fail on you.
Amazing. So are there any last-minute ideas that we should broach before we let you go?
Well, I think with the Tradesman program, I would encourage anyone listening, if you're thinking about getting new tires for your truck in your skilled trades, Google it. Just Google BF Goodrich KO2 Tradesman. And there are some amazing videos online. In fact, there's one I'd like to mention here before we go. When we were launching the KO2, we actually took a KO2 out in the desert, mounted it full air pressure on a tire, and dropped it out of an airplane over the desert. I believe it was in Nevada. So this tire comes down, fully dropped from, I think it was 10,000 feet, hits the ground. We had a Jeep waiting for it nearby. We rolled the tire over, put it on the Jeep, and then proceeded to go off-roading with it. And the tire was fine. This is just a really cool video, and we had some skydivers taping it go down. So if you search for BF Goodrich KO2, that's one of the first videos you'll see. But there's also a lot of other videos that demonstrate these tires being, you know, driving over pipes and sticks, stuff that you can't imagine. The full weight of a vehicle on this tire would not shred the tire up. So if you're considering tires and you need a tire that's going to be good on the road and off the road, just give it a search. Look at independent reviews. This tire is generally the top independently rated tire in its category. So I would encourage online research. That's always a good way to figure out ahead of time before you have to buy what the best option for you is.
Oh, fantastic. Well, I'm very excited to hear about your program, and I am most appreciative that you made the time to do the broadcast. And thanks for coming on a half hour earlier than we initially had planned for. And I hope you'll consider coming back when you have new things that you're working on.
Anytime.
So it's really cool. What a pleasure, sir. Thank you very, very much.
Thank you for having me.
All the best.
Have a great morning.
Thank
Bye.
You. Be well. Thank you. Mr. Watson, Phil Watson, rather, B.F. Goodrich, Director of Consumer Public Relations. What a pleasure. So hopefully people will look into it. They've got an interesting program for trade association members and even non-members. So there are a lot of benefits, evidently, to joining up on this new program that they've put together. It's so compelling, I always find, that when new ideas come into focus, it's not that they're so, I guess, out there and so different than anything else that we know, but they seem to get to the baseline, which is to be responsive to the human model. You know, we are growing technologically. We do have needs, and then we do need expertise. It's interesting to see that people can marry all this. Can you imagine they've got a think tank over at BF Goodrich just thinking about this stuff, which is very, very compelling as well, because it shows me that here's a company that's interested in connecting to the potential buyer of their product, and the buyer who recognizes the value of the product that they're being introduced to. Very, very exciting, to say the least. Well, let's find out what else is going on in our neck of the woods. Let's find out what's happening at the Yonkers Tribune, and then we'll be back.
The Yonkers Tribune, named Home of the Acid-Tongued Bloggers by the New York Times, is a multifaceted news organization dedicated to keeping the citizens of Yonkers and Westchester informed via the internet and radio. Hezzy Aris is the tireless publisher, editor, and radio host of the Yonkers Tribune. He is a balding, bearded gnome equipped with a digital camera and a steno pad at all times. Hezzy is frequently spotted in local meetings, translating the events into a Baroque prose style with an infusion of well-mannered outrage. The Yonkers Tribune attracts an informed, well-educated, affluent audience who hungers to know more about politics in all its permutations and nuances. Politics, says Hezzy, is our forte. Advertising inquiries are always welcome. Please call Hezzy Aris at 914-562-0834 or send an email to ehezi@hush.com.
Welcome back. In case you are interested in reaching out to the Yonkers Tribune, They've got a new office number, which is 347-415-4326, 347-415-4326. You can call them. You can text them at that number. It's their cell number. It's also their office number. So if that's of interest, certainly that might be a lot of fun. Well, let's look and see what's going on in the international landscape, and particularly with news. And as we always start, we are always looking at what happens in the Americas first. And one of the most intriguing things that just came out is that Monsanto has been ordered to pay 81 million euros to cancer victim who used a Roundup weed killer. That's the name of the product, Roundup weed killer. Monsanto was ordered on a Wednesday, that's yesterday, to pay some $81 million to an American retiree who blames his cancer on the agribusiness giant's weed killer Roundup. So a San Francisco jury found the firm, which is owned by Bayer, the German company, had been negligent by not using reasonable care, end quote, to earn and to warn of the risks of its product, and it ordered it to pay Edwin Hardeman $75 million in punitive damages, $5.6 million more in compensation, and $200,000 for medical expenses. The jury also found that Roundup's design was defective and that the product lacked sufficient warnings of potential risk. The same jury had previously found that a quarter century exposure to Roundup, whose principal ingredient is controversial chemical glyphosate, was a substantial factor, quote unquote, in giving the 70-year-old Hardeman non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. The verdict marks a major setback for Bayer, which purchased Monsanto last year for $63 billion and has seen its shares plunge because of the litigation. The company said it would appeal the verdict even though it sympathized with Hardeman's plight. Quote, "We are disappointed with the jury's decision, but this verdict does not change the weight of our four decades of extensive science and the conclusions of regulators worldwide that support the safety of our glyphosate-based herbicides and that they are not carcinogenic," a Bayer said in a statement. So the verdict in this trial has no impact on future cases and trials, as each one has its own factual and legal circumstances. Hardeman's attorneys, who cheered and hugged their clients as the verdict was announced, said they were pleased the jury had unanimously ruled in his favor and that Monsanto was being held accountable. Quote, "It is clear from Monsanto's actions, care whether Roundup causes cancer, focusing instead on manipulating public opinion and undermining anyone who raises genuine and legitimate concerns about Roundup," attorneys Amy Wagstaff and Jennifer Moore said in a statement. "It speaks volumes that not one Monsanto employee, past or present, came live to trial to defend Roundup's safety or Monsanto's actions." Cases one of more than 11,200 similar cases in the U.S. alone involving Roundup. Last year, Monsanto lost a case to a California school groundkeeper suffering from terminal non-Hodgkin's lymphoma who had sued the company over the glyphosate weed killer Roundup and Ranger Pro. Monsanto was initially ordered to pay $289 million to Dwayne Johnson before the damages were reduced to $78.5 million. Monsanto was initially ordered to pay $289 to Dwayne. I read that. Something came in, and I was reading two things. I can't do two things at once. My girlfriend always told me that, but I never believed her. What am I going to do? That's another story. Okay, so multitasking maybe is not a male trait. It may be a female trait for all we know, but I still disagree. But it is what it is. So Bayer has also filed an appeal in that case. And Monsanto has consistently denied that the weed killer causes cancer and challenged findings by the International Agency for Research on Cancer, an agency of the World Health Organization, WHO, which classified glyphosate as a probable carcinogen back in 2015. But each major agencies like the European Food Safety Authority, EFSA, the European Chemicals Agency, ECHA, or the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, the EPA, have not followed suit. Carl Tobias, a law professor at the University of Richmond, advised Agence France-Presse that Hardeman's case was, quote, important as a bellwether, which means it helps predict how future cases will be decided, end quote. And Tobias said the verdict bodes well for plaintiffs in the thousands of other cases filed against Monsanto and was, quote, likely to encourage plaintiffs and their counsel to be more vigorous in pursuing their cases and will lead more potential plaintiffs to file suit. The Environmental Working Group, a nonprofit, cheered Wednesday's verdict. Clearly, the testimony that informed the jury's decision was Bayer Monsanto hiding Roundup's carcinogenic properties, manipulating the science, and cozying up with EPA so it would not have to warn consumers of its dangerous products, said the group's president, Ken Cook. Now, Bayer Monsanto has known for decades the cancer-causing properties of Roundup, and I applaud the jury for holding the company accountable for failing to warn consumers of the known danger, end quote. Quote, again, this verdict puts Bayer's back firmly up against the wall as the cost of litigation mounts and its stock prices get pummeled once again, he added. So very, very interesting retrospective on what's taken place, and very compelling. Let's just see. I don't think that we have anything else on the in the northern or the southern hemisphere in the Americas that's pertinent or that we've already given you the information in the past days. So there literally is no rationale to repeat what we've already shared with you. So let's look and see what's going on in Europe. Evidently, Roma, these are known as gypsies, but in Europe they're known as Roma, in France are seeking police protection after attacks, which is very, very compelling. It seems that Roma people in France are seeking police protection after attacks fueled by false rumors on social media and messaging apps. Listen to this report. Bear with me a moment as I raise the volume. Okay. Bear with me a moment. So let's get started.
On social media networks, rumors that members of the Roma community were kidnapping children spread like wildfire, though news that information was false proved much slower to convince.
There were videos and there were photos showing a van with Roma people taking children.
Videos propagating the false claims were shared by the hundreds.
It's a network that tries to take our children, it says, in order to sell them as prostitutes.
The rumor then gave way to calls for violence against the Roma community, some even posting images of themselves engaged in revenge attacks, a phenomenon that's only growing in frequency, according to some specialists.
In India, not too long ago, last year, these types of angry mobs committed actual killings. So we have to be very careful. Nowadays, these kinds of mobs are a real public danger.
Increasingly blamed for their roles in such incidents, social media giants are on the defensive. In a press release on Wednesday, Facebook insisted that when certain forms of disinformation contribute to physical harm, they delete the content. A step that's too little, too late, according to some French lawmakers who are proposing legislative changes.
We should be able to ensure on these platforms that such messages
which are incitements to violence and hate, are removed quickly. And we should also be able to sanction social media companies that do not regulate these messages with a more efficient reporting mechanism. Critics say social networking platforms do not make sufficient use of existing tools for reporting hateful content.
Unbelievable. So that's one of the stories coming out of Europe. And let's just look again. Bear with me a second here. 1 second here. And this is intriguing as well. Evidently, rescued migrants have briefly hijacked a ship off the Libyan coast. A Maltese special operations team re-seized a tanker that was briefly hijacked by migrants and is now heading to a Maltese port. The migrants will be handed over to police for investigation. Migrants hijacked a cargo ship that rescued them in the Mediterranean Sea and forced the crew to put the Libya bound vessel on a course north toward Europe. Authorities in two European countries had advised. Italy's Interior Minister Matteo Salvini identified the ship as the Turkish oil tanker El Hiblu 1. He said the tanker had rescued about 120 people and described what was happening as, quote, the first act of piracy on the high seas with migrants as alleged hijackers. The new route put the ship on a route to Italy's Lampedusa Islands and the island nation of Malta. The governments of both countries vowed to keep it from their territorial waters in the Mediterranean. Poor castaways who hijack a merchant ship that saved them because they want to decide the route of the cruise. Salvini, who heads the Anti-Migrant League party, was quoted as saying, by the ANSA, ANSA, the Australian-New Zealand Association, ANSA, Anti-Migrant League Party, which quoted as saying that the ANSA is a regular humanitarian group. Anyway, Italian media said the crew planned to take the group it rescued and was headed that way when migrants seized control of the ship 6 miles from the Libyan coast. The armed forces of Malta said military personnel was standing by and the tanker was in Libyan territory waters as of early Wednesday. A Maltese military official told Maltese media carrying 100 migrants, 108 migrants. In fact, the official was not authorized to speak to reporters and requested anonymity. So the official also said Malta would not allow the hijacked tanker to enter the country's waters. And Italy's Salvini said weather conditions were not good and it was unclear if the tanker would end up approaching Malta or Lampedusa Island, but he had a message for the prostitutes, forget about Italy. And that's where we ended up. And so we'll see what transpires further in Europe with regard to these incidences. And this is interesting as well, but we're not going to cover it much more deeply. British Prime Minister Theresa May said she would resign in case it demanded her to pull away from the Brexit deadlock. So she's looking for some sort of accommodation, but she also knows that there is a call for a change in government, meaning that they want her out, and she's offered to quit once the Brexit deal is delivered. And so she's maintained that. She originally was not for Brexit, but that she changed her mind when the voters actually came out for it. So we'll just see where all that goes, because I'm not quite sure myself. All right, well, let's see what's going on in the Middle East. Evidently, a hospital has been hit in airstrike as Yemenis mark 4 years of war. So let's just look and see what's happening there. One moment. Where is it here? Okay, it seems a hospital was hit in an airstrike as Yemenis mark 4 years of war. An airstrike killed 7 people at a charity-supported hospital on Tuesday as Yemeni rallied to show support for the Houthi movement on the 4th anniversary of the war that has killed thousands and pushed the country to the brink of starvation. The Iran-allied war has controlled, and so much more. We'll end up just sharing the prognosis of the the clothing that was supposed to be cleaned, and now we're doing the reporting as well. So it's the same sort of stuff. But that's what's really happening there. And I tend to think that there really is not as much news as we thought there would be. Let me quickly look and see what else is happening in the Middle East. Okay. One second. No. It looks like that's about it. Let me quickly look and see if there's anything of pertinence with regard to Asia and see what's compelling. This is interesting with regard to Mullah Omar, how the U.S. failed to catch the former Taliban leader. This is by Mullah Omar, who died in 2013, was the founding leader of the Taliban. So we'll just hear what went on over there. Bear with me a moment as we reach out to this report. This is also a report from France 24, and we'll see what that is. So bear with me a second.
Our state and nation has ever seen.
U.S. President Donald Trump has called the crisis a public health emergency.
It is time to liberate our communities from this scourge of drug addiction. Never been this way.
Opioids, including both heroin and prescription drugs, were a factor in a record 48,000 deaths across the U.S. in 2017, with many patients becoming addicted to the painkiller OxyContin following accidents. Purdue Pharma is accused of helping to create the crisis through its marketing of this painkiller to doctors, making tens of billions of dollars from the drug.
For over 100 years, the medical community in the United States, and indeed throughout the world, was well aware that opioids like oxycodone and hydrocodone are highly addictive. Purdue changed that perception through a devious but very effective marketing campaign.
Lawyers for plaintiffs pursuing similar cases on a national level welcome the statement and now hope it can lead the way in forcing other pharmaceutical companies to pay back to the community. Nearly $200 million will go towards establishing a National Center for Addiction Studies and Treatment at Oklahoma State University, while local governments will get $12.5 million. The companies controlling family, the Sacklers, are responsible for $75 million of the settlements. The family are major cultural donors in the past few weeks, and the accusations have mounted. The Tate in London and the Guggenheim in New York have cut ties with the family, while other museums have come under pressure to follow suit. However, not everyone sees the settlement as a victory. Some victims and activists say they were denied the chance to hold the company fully accountable in court. Now, also in the U.S. this week, 3 suicides devastated communities already linked by tragic school shootings. 2 were young survivors of last year's massacre at a high school in Parkland, Florida. The 3rd was a father of a child killed in the 2012 attack on Sandy Hook Elementary School in Connecticut. The deaths have shown a spotlight on the lingering trauma left by gun violence, as Emerald Maxwell reports.
A ribbon for each of the victims killed by gun violence since Sandy Hook. Over the past week, tragedy struck again for survivors, with 3 people taking their own lives. two of them having students at Stoneman Douglas, a Florida school attacked on Valentine's Day last year. A third, the father of a child killed at Sandy Hook Elementary 6 years ago. Jeremy Richmond had set up a non-profit to support neuroscience research into what leads someone to cause harm. The AVL Foundation said his death tragically spoke to how insidious a challenge brain health can be. Calls are growing for more support for those who survive mass shootings, suffering from conditions like post-traumatic stress and survivor's guilt. Former Stoneman Douglas student David Hogg asked how many more kids had to be taken for the government to do anything, adding two to the death toll from the 2018 shooting.
Still going on, we're still feeling the after effects of this tragedy that could have been avoided. And these kids, they shouldn't have guilt about it. They didn't. It's not them that should have the guilt. It's the leaders of Broward County that should have the guilt that allowed this to happen.
In the 20 years since Columbine, more than 223,000 American students have been exposed to gun violence. On top of the trauma and grief resulting from these incidents, survivors sometimes have to deal with political scrutiny. In the aftermath of the Stoneman Douglas attack, students who lobbied for tougher gun control found themselves under attack from right-wing commentators. And Jeremy Richmond was among the families of Sandy Hook victims who filed a defamation lawsuit last year against conspiracy theorist Alex Jones for claiming that the shooting was a hoax.
Venezuela decreed a 24-hour holiday Tuesday to cope with a new near-nationwide blackout. The government, in the midst of a major opposition led by self-proclaimed interim president Juan Guaido, said the power outages were caused by an attack targeting its main hydroelectric plant. That came after a week-long power outage earlier this month, with many Venezuelans now wondering if this will be the new normal. Also this week, the Mexican president demanded an apology for what he called the abuses of centuries of colonialism. Andrés Manuel López Obrador tore open a 500-year-old wound when he sent letters to the King of Spain and the Pope. The Spanish government responded with a blunt no, saying it firmly rejects the idea. The Vatican, for its part, reminded Mexico a series of popes had already apologized for the abuses committed in the name of evangelizing the indigenous peoples of the New World. Now, Apple rolled out its plans this week to finally jump into the streaming business first pioneered by Netflix. Oprah Winfrey, Steven Spielberg, and Jennifer Aniston were part of a parade of A-listers who took to the stage at Apple's California headquarters. Apple CEO Tim Cook also introduced the Apple credit card with both a physical and digital version that gives you up to 3% cash back. But Apple's stock closed down 1% after the announcement. Vague details about the credit card's interest rate and the price of the new streaming service left investors unconvinced that they could make up for slowing iPhone sales. And as Apple was announcing its streaming future, one former video giant is now down to its very last store, a victim of the changing ways we watch movies and TV. There were once thousands of blockbuster rental stores around the world. Selena Sykes has more now on the last one in Oregon.
Wandering through the aisles, browsing the shelves, and experiencing the thrill of snagging that last copy. From its membership cards to those dreaded late fees, going to a Blockbuster store was once a cherished ritual for all film lovers. Fast forward to 2019, just one is still in business.
We still have popcorn ceilings, we have yellow and blue everywhere, we still have the same movies everywhere. It just feels like you're stepping back in time.
The town of Bend in Oregon is home to the world's last Blockbuster store. Staying afloat in the age of tech is not easy. Its computers are rebooted by floppy disks, and membership cards are written by hand.
We didn't want to give in. We did everything we possibly could to cut costs and to keep ourselves relevant. If you'd have told me 15 years ago that I would be here still running the last one, I would have said no way.
In its heyday in the early 2000s, Blockbuster had 9,000 outlets. But what was once the world's largest video renting chain struggled to keep up with the rise of on-demand streaming. Selling souvenirs, much of the store's business now comes from nostalgia-seeking tourists.
think I missed quite a bit being able to walk into a Blockbuster or a CD store and have that social experience and see people looking at stuff and talking to people that understand, you know, what's out there and available in the market.
But the last Blockbuster also has regular local customers who enjoy the novelty of renting films.
Today we were looking for Riding a Carson Boys, which is a weird older movie, but we can't find it anywhere. And then also it's the only place that still rents games.
The last Blockbuster store has even inspired a documentary. With new sign-ups every day, it's confident it won't be hitting the rewind button anytime soon.
We'll leave you now in Mexico, where a volcanic explosion lit up the sky this week. The El Popo volcano unleashed a powerful explosion, spewing out lava, incandescent rock, and ash. Mexico City residents were shaken by the tremors following the violent eruption just 40 miles away. El Popo is the country's most active volcano. That wraps it up for this edition of Inside the Americas. Thanks so much for watching. Don't forget, if you want to get the very latest on the region, you can always check out our website, France24.com. In the meantime, I'll see you next time for all the news from north to south.
A program about women who are reshaping our world. We meet those who seek equality, be it in the boardroom or at the village well. The 51% brings you stories from across the globe about the women who are challenging the way we think.
The 51%, presented by Annette Young, France 24 and France24.com.
Regarde France 24, parce qu'en tant qu'étudiante en sciences politiques, ça me permet de rester à jour sur les informations dans le monde, sur les conflits, les débats politiques, tout ça.
الاختلاف بين فرنسا 24 والقنوات الثانية في المحتوى المتنوع وفي التوجه الأقرب للحيادية.
I like their coverage, especially with the news and the politics. But also I like the cultural aspect, so that me as a Kenyan, I get to learn a lot about Francophone, Africa, Francophone in general, whether it's in Europe or here, just from France and people.
France 24, mais d'avoir une perspective plus complète du monde, et comprendre différentes langues, différentes cultures.
France 24, with you everywhere, all the time.
Well, that's it for our day. We're going to truncate the program. It's about 11:30 right now. We'll see you tomorrow, and hopefully you'll join us then. Until then, have a great day, and let me go back to our studio screen and say goodbye. Take care. Goodbye.
It's time for Driving Me Crazy, coming to you live from Beechtree Studios near beautiful Pinehurst, North Carolina. This is the only show where a husband and wife drive, talk cars and life, and...
Wow. Are we there?
It's time for Driving Me Crazy, coming to you live from Beechtree Studios near beautiful Pinehurst, North Carolina. This is the only show where a husband and wife drive, talk cars and life, and still love one another each day. Here's John and Laurie. Or is it Laurie and John? Oh, take it away, you crazy kids.
Well, it's both. It's both of us.
It's
good morning, Hezzy.